Okay, so last week in our story, I left off at the point where a time-traveling, gay, sort of LGBT advocate is inspecting the past by means of a time-travel device that is set up in a Motel 6 room with his assistant, Sean. And he's gone back to the time of Jesus to try to investigate the Jesus myth. And he has found that while in the past, he appears to be Judas Iscariot. And when they're all coming to the Last Supper to meet up with Jesus, Judas Iscariot, the real Judas Iscariot, comes. And he pays Judas Iscariot 30 pieces of silver to just take off, you know, and have a few nights on the town. And Judas Iscariot is just delighted at this, and he takes the money and runs out. But it turns out that finally, when Jesus shows up, the main character is flabbergasted to find that there isn't any Jesus, there isn't any one Jesus. There are, at last count, 11 Jesuses so far. And they're all time travelers from the future who also came back into the past, but they're not really interested in the Jesus myth or in scholarly pursuit so much as just getting drunk and having sex. And it's kind of, you know, it's been a kind of disappointment, but on the other hand, getting drunk and having sex. So that's where we are at part three. I awake in our Motel 6 laboratory with a raging heart on. Geez, says my assistant, Sean. What the frig are you up to there, Zeke? Do crucifixions give you a boner? I laugh. Well, not really. I need to get back there ASAP. Something very significant is about to happen. Of course, I'm referring to the hot tryst with Jesus number two, which I'm eager to resume. Sean pulls up my robe and declares, yeah, you're going to pop like a rocket, and goes down on me with a ravaging thirst before sending me off to Old Jerusalem once more. Couldn't ask for a better assistant. My chubby quickly shrivels from rock hard to flaccid and pops unceremoniously out of Jesus II's brown-pink orifice. Crikey, I whine to myself. Too much carryover on the transmogrifier's amp. I whip out my Android touchpad to make a note about adjusting the circuitry and quickly slip it back into my undersash. Erectile dysfunction, huh? Mumbles the haughty avatar whose face is buried in a henna-tinted satin pillow. He drops a hand languidly over the bed and bumps the Illudium Q36 explosive space modulator hidden beneath my discarded robe. A green light glows through the linen, and a searingly pink phaser beam pierces his head. In another instant, he is gone. Nothing remains but a small heap of ashes, a mini blob of molten silver that once was the rune-etched earring, and a sheepskin cock ring. A whiff of smoke rises to the ceiling with a cauterized flesh odor that pervades the bedroom chamber. I start gagging against my will. Better move fast, I think, as I discard the cinders in a bronze urn, quickly dissolved in my own puke, and find a new robe to replace the one now damaged by a large hole with burnt edges. I discover an ivory box stuffed with rosemary incense, light a cone, and place it in a bronze bowl resting on the bedside table. That should take care of the unholy stink, I conclude, then straighten out the bedding and exit. All the missing Jesuses are now present and seated at the supper table, 10 to be exact, as identified by each wearing a thorny crown and a papier-mâché bleeding heart dangling from a beaded necklace. Note, there would be 11 messiahs, but for the unfortunate accident so recently enacted in a boudoir, with myself the lone witness, thank goddess. They all share sips from the Kiddush cup, Kiddush, and only among themselves. Some of the Jesuses are spectacularly bedecked in this weird metallic cloth, or arrays of brilliant light of myriad hues, including one color I've never seen before. It gives me a toothache. Presumably they arrived from various futures more distant than the discovery of fire is to our present. As, for example, the following sad specimen of 438 generations of genetically engineered petri dish inseminated inbred Jesuses, and there's a picture here in the article that I'm not going to describe for you. There's also a clown Jesus. Clown Jesus. Odin only knows what's up with that, or maybe not. I seat myself quietly at one of two vacant chairs. Where's Jesus number two? Booms a savior whose name tag bears a lone number 7. He's the one that knocked over the market stalls earlier, I observe. Not one to place any suspicion upon yours truly, I pipe up. Oh, he just instructed me to tell all present that he was called away to an emergency healing. I adjust my robe nervously to bury the space modulator that was poking out. Well then, concludes number seven as he looks around at his multi-temporal Jesus counterparts, let us not tarry. On with the supper. The saviors and their apostles all dig into the roast lamb and herbs. However, there's also a bucket of H salt fish and chips, which a 20th or 21st century Jesus must have brought. So I decide to dive in and enjoy the fresh taste of New England cod with a splash of malt vinegar. The wine is quite potent, so I opt for A&W Diet root beer in order to remain lucid in my role as witness to biblical history in the making. I am astounded at the Jesus's gluttony, for they speak not a word, but gobble down their repast in record time with frequent pauses to lubricate their stomachs with fermented grape and barley. After one too many macerated figs and greasy-ass crackling, Jesus IV suddenly needs to relieve himself, so stands up before all guests and declares, excuse me, gentlemen, but I must take my annual poop over, or pash over plop. Everyone roars with laughter. Bartholomew, the most drunk of all, falls off the bench and lands on a rubbery crown of thorns. Rubbery crown of thorns, Jesus number eight had nonchalantly tossed from his false cap pate. The Jesus clown, sitting two paces down and across from me, honks his horn twice. Harpo Marx did it with much more joie de vivre, I observe. Jesus clown, apparently, as Jesus number three so patiently explained, while chewing on a supper fest of sheep testicles and pan-seared hummingbird with shredded cucumber relish, an unemployed clown sometime not too far from our own, had figured a way to take over the quantum noosphere and thus the entire planet. With that, he killed off all the present 111 billion inhabitants and replaced them with clown lookalikes and named himself King Stephen. Being Jesus was one of his dreams, now fulfilled, obviously. Fine with me, I abhor clowns. I'd be more than ecstatic to crucify every last one of these bald-headed, cotton-candy hair-ring, bulb-nosed, uber-lipped freaks in dotted pajamas and floppy Sasquatch feet. Suddenly a fishbone gets caught in my throat, and I begin to choke. The supper scene speedily dissolves into blackness, and I find myself once more at our Motel 6 makeshift laboratory, part 4. I wheeze from the splintery bone until my assistant Sean slaps me on the back and I spit it out. Wow, he exclaims. First a raging boner, then a medical emergency. What next, Zeke? Are you sure we shouldn't shut down this experiment before some ugly outcome ensues and you are lost to me forever? No, I'm onto something really astounding, I plead as my larynx heals from the now expelled obstruction. Send me back there immediately. I'm about to uncover a terribly shocking revelation. And what's that, my best friend, teases Sean. That Jesus has the biggest dick you ever slurped? Surely that doesn't raise the bar very much from your previous tryst. Sean, shut the fuck up and get me back to Jerusalem pronto. Okay, he shrugs. But I'll need to reinsert that bone back in your throat in order to return you to the precise moment you left. Fine with me, I counter. Just stop blocking my efforts and do it. So I return to the Last Supper, hacking like a cat with a major furball. Jesus IX rises from his seat and screeches, do something, brothers! We can't afford a dead body at this crucial moment. The last thing we want is centurions scouring this place for evidence while we rot in Gehenna until the culprit is brought to justice, which you know as well as I will never happen. Jesus number 10 pounds the table and declares, Judas is stealing our show. I attempt to speak. Hold on, my bosom buddies. I'm still alive. It's only a tiny bone that can easily be rectified by a solid pat on the back. Or at worst, stand behind and place your arms around. But my larynx remains crimped by the embedded sliver, and I cannot utter a single word. Cursing Henry Heimlich for not being born 2,000 or more years earlier, I slip into unconsciousness as a dearth of oxygen shuts me down. When I come to, it's pitch black, and the air seems stale. A rustling sound some feet away tells me I'm not alone. Who's there? I demand. Relax, pal. It's just me, Jesus Seven. No sooner does he speak than a soft yellow orb begins to glow near my feet and increase until the chamber is fully alight. Number Seven sits atop a stone sarcophagus, dangling his beefy legs. I approach him to ask, what happened? I thought I died. Oh, I just resurrected you. No kidding. I guess that makes you the real Jesus, eh? Perhaps my quest has ended in this fortuitous outcome that began in tragedy. Oh, ha, ha, no way. He laughs with such amusement I grow confused. He continues, check this out, Judas 2. And he hands me what appears to be an electronic device with four finger-sized loops, flickering stripes of orange and green, with a metallic plate soldered to one side from which hang jiggly thin tentacles tipped in gold. On the opposite side of this plate are the following letters stamped in Dayglow lime on a jet black surface of raised little bumps. Acme Resurrector 800. I hold it close to the shining orb. That's what brought me back to life? Yes, he replies while stepping down from the sarcophagus. The first resurrection device was invented 476 years after I was born in 2791. He raises a hand to reclaim this technological wonder. The deep robin's egg and ruby-tinted robes fall away from one arm to expose a firm, round bicep that flexes like a leopard. Faintly printed in a lighter tone on that bulging skin are the words Synthetic Anatomical Insert Number 024. I regain my composure and step back some feet. The craggy stone wall is damp and chill against my shoulder blades. Now, wait a minute. You just called me Judas too. Why? Because I met the real Judas Iscariot at the marketplace on my way back to Martha's house, he stated with a wry grin. I yearn to slide my turgid rod across those pouty lips. They are framed in a neatly clipped mustache and goatee. Jesus Seven then takes a step forward, exposing the outline of athletic thighs and a plump basket of goodies. Against my will, my penis engorges and bumps against the space modulator's nozzle. What do you want with me? Why am I here? This is Jesus' tomb. We drew straws to decide who will have the honor of being confined here for 3 days, and I won. He then points an accusatory digit at my trembling form. You, my dear friend, fucked things up royally for every Jesus here by choking to death on a fishbone. I adjust the modulator away from my pushy hard-on and wonder aloud. How? A dead body in the Jewish quarter would not please Caesar. Would all wind up in the Colosseum as a tasty morsel for lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my! His reference to Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz startles my already perplexed mind, a very gay thing to say in the midst of a cold, dark tomb in the year 33 A.D. We couldn't accept that outcome, he continues, while gazing deep into my eyes, or none of us would have the remarkable adventure of playing Jesus Christ himself. He sighs with a defeated shrug, and all our vacation and time travel expenses are not refundable. So you decided to dump my corpse here where Roman soldiers would never suspect. Bingo, you're a champ. He then places a large, strong hand on my left shoulder and begins to press those Grecian lips upon mine. The words Synthetic Anatomical Insert Number 102 appear in a pale shade of cherry upon his upper lip. A juicy tongue slips between my teeth. I swallow his wine-laden saliva and can barely contain my cock beneath the robe. What are you going to do with me now? I shiver in suspicious hesitation. Come, come, my darling boy. We may as well make the best of our time stuck here together for the next 3 days. And with that, a middle finger roughly thrusts its way through the tight walls of my anus. His other hand feverishly fondles my sweaty balls. I lose myself in ecstasy. He presses himself firmly against my quivering body, but I push him away at arm's length. So tell me this, Jesus Seven. Does the real Messiah exist? He ignores the question, knocks my arms aside to clutch me in wild passion. I am shoved against the wall, my robe pulled up by hungry hands. He slides his bouncy, camel-proportioned schlong against mine and whispers into my burning ear. I really have no... Before he finishes the sentence, his heaving breast activates the Illudium Q36 explosive space modulator. Here one moment, gone the next. I now find myself alone and gazing upon a pile of dust that once was Jesus Seven. A time travel brochure flutters from the sarcophagus onto the dirt floor beside the illuminated globe, titled Adventures in the Holy Land. Beneath the title in smaller print are these words, two-in-one package deal, Moses and Jesus. With that, my entire perception quickly fades into a nebulous charcoal gray, and I find myself once more reclined on the bed of our Motel 6 lab. Part 5. Sean already has my robe bunched up, my legs bent into a compromising position. He salivates for yet one more gobblefest. Aha! He declares. Another bone for this little pup, and dives right into my basket of eggs and bratwurst. My aching knob squirts copious wads of sperm across the surface of his tongue and down the esophagus, where it mingles in his belly with spicy Cheetos, root beer, and a hash brownie. I hand him the brochure. "You're jiving me," he remarks as he wipes away some excess semen dribbling down the lower lip and chin. A time travel brochure from the year 2879. He turns the flyer in his hand. "But how do we prove it's not a sham? Anyone can print this out." He unfolds it upon the coffee ring-stained night table, whence a 3D hologram pops out to depict a live-action mini-diorama of baby Moses floating amongst the bulrushes, alphanumeric characters in rosy gold, 16-point trebuchet font, hover above the scene, accompanied by gently blaring trumpets and a chorus of virgin castrati. Be Moses for a week. Talk with the Pharaoh and boink his hottest concubines and eunuchs. Just 13,666 buckazoids. A startled Sean promptly refolds the brochure and tosses it into an open file cabinet. Pearly beads of sweat gather about his forehead and trickle down. "I'm sorry I didn't believe you," my loyal aide confesses with a slight caress across my electrode-dotted scalp. "You've got to get back there." So the temporal transmogrifier begins to hum like a hornet. Intravenous fluid moves like quicksilver down the plastic tubing, and I am transported once more to ancient jaded Jerusalem. The overwhelming stench causes me to retch all over the illuminated orb. I notice a crack of light in the far wall, so I walk up to it and touch the surface alongside. With a low rumble, a boulder rolls away, and I'm out of there like a greased warthog, chased by two centurions who soon lose me thanks to their cumbersome wooden shields and breastplates. I would have paused to enjoy their phallic spears of righteousness were the moment more opportune. Jogging through the twisting alleyways, I find myself sheltered in a cool garden dense with olive trees somewhere in East Jerusalem. Another Jesus that I don't recognize from the supper party meditates in silence on a stump. He looks up at me with copious tears streaming down his face. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to intrude." My apology seems to touch him. He wipes away those tears and invites me to sit on a flat stone nearby. "Quite all right, good Samaritan. Please keep me company for a while. My brothers seem lost in superficial revelry tonight." Stars twinkle through the gnarly branches, and I breathe the cool air of nocturnal relief. He takes my hand and confides, "I shall soon be crucified. May you grant me one last wish before I depart this mortal coil." With that, he slides a cool hand up my thigh, and my flaccid crotch worm springs to life. Before my 40-minute window shuts down, I notice a small white tag beside his left foot. There's a number on it, and nothing else. 12. Part 6. The End. This time I wake to the present, alone in our Motel 6 room. A shower runs in the bathroom behind the closed door. I think long and hard on these recent pastime events and conclude the real Jesus may not exist, but surely there is a tremendously loving and witty God, as evidenced by the most astounding adventure I could ever imagine and which I shall never forget. I unplug the electrodes from my scalp and open the drawer of the side table to find, instead of the usual Gideon's Bible, a thick black book embossed with a large pink triangle on the cover. It is entitled The Final Testament, and just below that, in finer print, Every Faggot Man's Bible. Sean finally emerges from the restroom, terry cloth towel bound around his waist. He removes the towel to tussle his damp black hair with it and inquires, "Hey, you're back. So what'd you think, Zeke? Is the story of Jesus just a ruse, as you've claimed these many years?" I pull my eyes away from his cut abs, deliciously curved hips, and donkey wiener in an attempt to present him with the best conclusion possible, considering the recent chain of temporal events. "I really can't say anymore," I remark while gazing down in trembling wonder at the palms of my hands. Silvery spears of stigmata begin to pierce through, and the heady scents of frankincense and myrrh fill the laboratory. A few drops of blood spill onto the carpeted floor, from which lilies sprout.